It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Monday edition of It's Your Turn. The weekend came and went pretty quickly, and here we are, settling into the long haul here with the bulk of the winter stretching ahead of us. And this is really back to normal day today. Now, for a lot of folks, it was back to normal last Thursday and Friday following New Year's Day, but some folks had extended vacation, some students were still off. So for those of you with students in the family, that meant an unusual schedule. But everybody's back at it today, right? Yeah. Except for some college students are still on holiday break, but otherwise it's back to the grind here. And a long stretch ahead of us before we can start seriously thinking about spring. But the weather has not been too bad for us thus far this winter, huh? I almost hate to mention it, you know, want to jinx things, but we've had it pretty nice. I mean, you know, there was a stretch there back in mid-December where it got pretty cold for a while, but it was mainly during the overnight hours. And we did have a few days where it didn't warm up too much, but not a whole lot of snow yet. No. And not an extended stretch of frigid temperatures yet. That's coming. Yeah, you know, it's coming. But the long-range forecast for this week, we do have a cold day on Wednesday with highs only in the mid-20s. But then it's going to warm up again. And right now, National Weather Service expects us to be back up in the 50s by Friday and Saturday. So strange. And that'll take us almost 2 weeks into January. Wow. Well, we're not complaining about that. At least I don't think most folks are. Maybe operators of ski resorts, but for most of us, that's just great. A mild winter would be just great. Open talk to begin the program today. Our phone number, as always, 283-2525. If you'd like to join us in conversation, 283-2525. We're going to be talking a little bit later on the program today with a man who's currently out in Las Vegas. He's at the Consumer Electronics Show out there. Mario Armstrong is his name, and we're going to be talking about some of the high-tech trends that are going to be coming over the next decade. Boy, when you think about over the last decade, wow. Stuff that developed that, was only a dream prior to that. Stuff like artificial intelligence and things like that. Well, there'll be big changes, you can bet, in the next decade. We'll be talking about some of those with Mario Armstrong. And also scheduled to visit with us for a few minutes later on the program today is David Levy, author of a book called Life is a Four-Letter Word. Levy is a professor of psychology at Pepperdine University. It's out in California, yeah, out on the West Coast. So that's still to come later on the program today, but open talk to begin with. I was struck by a recent headline in the Tribune Review newspaper. It used to be the Pittsburgh Tribune Review, now it's just the Trib again. The headline said, Suburbia Ditching Trump and the GOP. Subtitle, High-Earning Women Defecting in Droves, Giving Democrats Hope. Maybe that's the case in some parts of the country. I certainly haven't seen or heard anything like that around here. Have you? Most of the folks that I've talked to who were Trump supporters of Donald Trump 4 years ago, are still supporters of Donald Trump. If anything, they seem to be even stronger supporters, right? Are you a Trump person? Yeah? Do you still support him after, well, not quite 4 years, but almost the first 4 years of his run at the presidency? And, of course, he's going to be seeking re-election for another 4 years. I don't know. I mean, we'll find out, of course, later this year, but in our immediate area, at least, and Butler County went solidly for Trump back in 2016. I don't see any, or at least a lot of people, changing their minds on him. What about you? If you're a Trump supporter, are you still strong in his corner? In light of everything that's happened over the past 3+ years, 283-2525 is our number, 283-2525. Trump still has most evangelicals strongly in his corner. He portrayed himself as a defender of faith recently when he, this was just late last week, as a matter of fact, when he addressed a group of evangelical supporters, more than 5,000 Christians, at an event down in Miami where Trump and his wife were over the holidays. 283-2525 is our number, 283-2525, open talk on the It's Your Turn program today. Horrible fatal crash on the Pennsylvania Turnpike yesterday morning. I'm sure you heard about that before dawn Sunday. In the Mount Pleasant area of Westmoreland County, a tour bus headed from New York to Cincinnati, Ohio, overturned, and that led to the multi-vehicle crash. The tour bus went out of control and overturned, ended up in the middle of the highway, 3:45 in the morning yesterday, and was then struck by several other vehicles, including two tractor-trailer rigs, another truck, and a car. Five people dead. It seemed to me, and the National Transportation Safety Board said it may take months, even more than a year, before they can come up with their final report, which, I don't know, kind of baffles me. I realize they've got other things to do, but how can it take that long? You know, I saw a woman interviewed on TV yesterday from the National Transportation Safety Board. Said, well, we'll be collecting evidence. And, well, I mean, they would have had to do that pretty quickly, wouldn't they? I mean, they had to clear the turnpike yesterday. It took them all day. But eventually they got the wreckage all hauled away, towed away, and opened up the turnpike last evening. So it was closed for a long time. But what other evidence are they going to gather? I assume they picked up most of it at the scene. The National Transportation Safety Board will often take many, many months before they come up with a cause of an airplane disaster, but a wreck on a highway, I don't know. It was just my first thought, what takes so long, you know? You interview any witnesses, and there were lots of survivors on the bus. There were three people who died on the bus, but lots of survivors they could talk to, interview the witnesses, and, you know, talk to the police and the turnpike officials about weather conditions. And that's it. It just kind of boggles my mind that when she said, well, it'll take months, maybe longer, before we finish our investigation. Okay. Well, that's certainly being thorough, that's for sure. I don't like driving on the Pennsylvania Turnpike. I never have. And I don't travel it unless I absolutely have to. Now, there are some, you know, if you're going some places, Harrisburg, for example, I mean, you pretty much got to do it. Or if you're headed south to Virginia or Georgia or Florida, a lot of folks will take the turnpike down to Breezewood and then get on the interstate from there on. But it just I don't know. It's the fact that there's no median strip in most areas, just a very narrow barrier. And you got people flying by, coming the other direction, trucks at, 60, 65, 70 miles an hour. And there are stretches. And right about where that fatal accident occurred yesterday morning, it's very curvy. There are some pretty steep hills. It appeared to me that the bus overturned, went out of control and overturned, coming downhill on a pretty steep curve. Sometimes it almost seems like it's an accident ready to happen. I know when I'm driving on the turnpike, I'm always extra alert. I'm kind of tense. I don't want people talking to me. And I'm happy when I get off it. Much more so than driving on an interstate highway, which for the most part, they have a wide median strip. It just doesn't seem quite so dangerous. But certainly a bad crash. Five people dead, close to 60 injured and taken to area hospitals. Can imagine what that scene must have been like before dawn yesterday. 283-2525 is our number, 283-2525. Story of a woman up in the Petrolia area who was the victim of theft by deception. State police are still investigating this. The woman, 56-year-old woman from Petrolia, the police report did not give her name, but she had ordered something online and paid for almost $2,700. Wow. I got a credit card, I guess. And she never got what she ordered. The item or items were not specified on the police report. It just said that she never got the product and she never had any return of her payment. And this all took place in the middle of December, so we're, 3 weeks, close to a month after that now, and state police looking into it. My first thought when I saw that was, gosh, that's an awful large amount to buy something online, almost $2,700. The website was not specified, so I don't know whether it was from a well-known online seller or somebody was rather obscure. But you do have to be careful, don't you? Yeah. I mean, I buy stuff online, but it's a lot of money. 2017, it could have been, I don't know. Could have been eBay or something like that. The police report did not specify. Got to be careful these days, huh? A lot of people out there ready to take your money. 283-2525, our number, Open Talk. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more here on the Monday edition of It's Your Turn on WISR. Back right after these words.
In 2019, Tri-River celebrates 25 years as your Butler neighbor, providing exceptional musculoskeletal care in the community.
Hi, I'm Dr. Tom Mazzanegro, known by many as Dr. Muzzy, and I'm an orthopedic hip and knee surgeon. Patients do best when they are engaged with the process, educated, and invested in their own well-being. At Tri-Rivers, the patient is at the center of everything we do.
To learn more or to schedule an appointment, visit TriRiversMSK.com or call 1-866-874-7483.
How do you choose a funeral home? Reputation? The facility? A general feeling about the organization itself? Should you consider cremation? And of course, cost. I know you have many questions, so let Thompson Miller Funeral Home in Butler help you with some of the answers. We know our business and how to serve the Butler community. After all, we've been here for more than 90 years. A third generation of the same family is dedicated to this service. Thompson Miller provides complete services with dignity in the funeral home, at graveside, and for entombment. Thompson Miller is here to help you through the planning process with advice, counsel, experience, and compassion. Call us, and we'll help you make these important and sensitive decisions. 724-287-3706, 287-3706, or visit our website at www.thompson-miller.com. Thompson Miller, at the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Thompson Miller, because we care.
Welcome back. It's Open Talk on this segment of the It's Your Turn program here on WISR. I'm Dave Malarkey. Caller, go right ahead. It's your turn. Nice to have you with us today.
Hi there. How are you today?
I'm just fine. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Enjoying this lovely weather. No snow.
Not bad for January, eh?
Yes, I'm loving every minute of it. I got the conversation started. I guess nobody else is calling in. I have a question for you. We're having a discussion on it. When is Russian Orthodox Christmas? I said it was yesterday, and a family friend is telling me, no, it's tomorrow. So I always thought it was the first Sunday in January.
Well, I think the confusion may come from the fact that it usually coincides with the Feast of the Epiphany, which, and I'm no expert on this, but I think it's January 6th or 7th, but in recent years, that's been marked on a Sunday, you know, instead of in the middle of the week. So,
which would have been yesterday.
In many churches, yeah, the Feast of the Epiphany was marked yesterday. But I don't know. I'm not Orthodox, so I do know, and I've talked with many people, in fact, many clergy of the Orthodox faith, and they say that a lot of churches here in the U.S. now celebrate Christmas on December 25th, you know, according to the Gregorian calendar. And some do it on both days, you know. They'll do it on the 25th of December, and then they'll do it on the Julian calendar, too, in early January.
We usually do both. I have still probably one of the few my Christmas trees up, and I'm taking it down today, and that's where the discussion started, that I need to leave it up to after tomorrow. And I said, no, it's time to take it down. So maybe one of your callers, your listeners, will know.
Well, I believe that it's tomorrow officially, but again, I'm not Orthodox, so I can't tell you.
All righty.
Sure.
Well, thank you for your time.
Sure.
Have a good day.
Thanks. Anybody know the correct answer on that? The celebration of Orthodox Christmas? I think it's tomorrow. But again, is it movable? I don't know. 283-2525 is the number. We have quite a few Orthodox churches here in western Pennsylvania, mainly to serve immigrants who came from, in most cases, Eastern Europe or Russia, a long time ago. 283-2525 is the number. Do you still have your Christmas decorations up, whether you're Orthodox or not? I do. I never take my tree down right away or my other Christmas decorations. I like to enjoy them. I'm not going to leave them up till Valentine's Day, but they're still up right now. Let's go to this line next. Our phone number is 283-2525. Hi, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
It's always January the 7th.
Always January 7th?
Always.
Are you and your family Orthodox?
No, but they were Eastern Rites, half of them. So they celebrated on the 20th. They celebrated by the old calendar, too, the Julian calendar.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband's family was Orthodox.
Well, I have talked to some people, even some of the local Orthodox leaders here in the Butler area, and they say, some people celebrate it on the 25th now.
Some of the churches have made it because of the younger people, college, vacations and that kind of thing. But the actual date is set on the calendar. In fact, I have my calendar from the Roman Catholic Church, which says Julian Christmas observed on January the 7th. It's in print.
So that'll be tomorrow then, huh?
Correct, yes.
Well, Merry Christmas to our Orthodox friends then. This is Christmas Eve for them.
Yes, there are some churches and areas that still hold to that.
Yeah. Well, thanks a lot. I appreciate you filling us in here.
Sure. Maybe help the lady out that was interested.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Are there no Orthodox in my family, so I don't know. Are there Christmas Eve traditions for the Orthodox celebration of Christmas? You know, in some ethnic families, there are things that are done Christmas Eve every year, December 24th. I know in many Italian families, they have the Feast of the Seven Fishes on December 24th. I'm not Italian either, but I know of that. And there are other traditions that many people have for Christmas Eve. Is it that way in the Orthodox traditions? Well, I don't know. Are there traditional foods in the Orthodox tradition to celebrate either Christmas Eve or Christmas Day? I don't know. Do they exchange gifts too? Orthodox Christmas? I don't know. They'll be celebrating tomorrow. Yeah. And much of Russia, right, is Orthodox. The vast majority of Russians are. Their religious expressions were suppressed for decades during the time of the Soviet Union. But from what I understand, Orthodox traditions have really surged in recent years, despite the fact, you know, that Vladimir Putin runs Russia with an iron hand. The churches have reopened, and they're able to practice their religion much more freely now. And that is the majority religion by far in Russia, Orthodox. So they'll be getting ready. Of course, much of Russia is way ahead of us in terms of time. They're probably celebrating already, huh? Christmas Eve in Russia. 283-2525 is our number, 283-2525. Over this past holiday season, I saw a couple of stories in the news about the death of Apollo police officer Leonard Miller, who was killed in a so-called thrill for kill or kill for thrill shooting rampage that took place in western Pennsylvania decades ago, long time ago. And two of the individuals who were convicted in that shooting spree, which took the life of several other people in addition to Leonard C. Miller. One of them died in prison. They were both sentenced to be executed. One died in prison a year or so ago. The other one is still on death row, 40-some years later here in Pennsylvania. Good? Bad? I don't know. There have been a lot of appeals, so on and so forth, with this particular individual, but as of now, he remains on death row. There have been no executions in Pennsylvania for many, many years, and in fact, there's a moratorium on executions right now throughout the entire state. It was instituted by Governor Tom Wolf. There are still cases where prosecutors have indicated that they will seek the death penalty. The most recent high-profile case, the Tree of Life shootings, down at the synagogue in Pittsburgh. And that's over a year now. It was October of 2018 that happened. And it's troubling to me that we still have not had a trial in that case. I don't quite understand that. I'm not for, lynchings. String them up the next day like you used to see in the old cowboy movies on TV back in the day when they had lynch mobs. But by the same token, you know, here we are. Well, that was in October of 2018. That's a long time ago. And still no trial yet. for the man accused in the synagogue shootings. And, you know, this is a case where there's, I mean, let's use common sense here. There's not too much doubt about it. This is the guy, for goodness sakes. He's the guy that the police were finally able to apprehend inside the synagogue with the guns. I mean, you wonder what can possibly take so long to seek justice, one way or another. You know, find him guilty or acquit him. But it drags on and on and on. I don't think that's healthy. I don't understand why it happens. And you have to shudder at the cost, right, to sound mercenary in cases like this. But for goodness sakes, have a trial. And for people who lost loved ones in that horrible day, no closure for them. As this procedure drags on and on and on. I'm not a lawyer. I'm certainly not an expert in the law, but it's just one of these things that makes me wonder, what can possibly take so long, you know, to have a trial, to decide whether or not this man's going to be found guilty or acquitted. 283-2525 is our number. 283-2525. Open talk. You're on the It's Your Turn program today. Well, we're coming up here. My goodness, coming up pretty quickly on the 1 o'clock hour, just a few minutes away. We're going to take a break because we're going to be chatting with our first guest coming up on the It's Your Turn program here in just a couple of minutes. And his name is Mario Armstrong. You may have seen him on TV. He's been on a lot of shows. Today's show on NBC, Dr. Oz, Rachel Ray, CNN, NPR. He is right now in Las Vegas at the Consumer Electronics Show, and we're going to pick his mind about some of the high-tech things that we're probably going to see in the next decade. Just think back over the past 10 years. All the things that we pretty much take for granted today, but if you went back at the start of the previous decade, people wouldn't even have known what you're talking about when you mention some of these things. So we'll get an idea on what we might expect with Mario Armstrong. That'll be coming up here on the It's Your Turn program on WISR right after these messages.
Armco Credit Union has one sweetheart of a loan rate waiting for you. Hi, I'm Kurt Heekins, loan manager at Armco Credit Union. And whether you're thinking of buying a vehicle or refinancing a loan from another financial institution, now is the time to take advantage of our low, low rates. Now through February the 29th, you can get a 60-month auto loan for as low as 2.25 annual percentage rate. Check out armcocu.com for other rates and terms. Apply for a loan online or visit us in person.
Armco Credit Union is an equal opportunity lender and is federally insured by NCUA.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler. Coming up, listeners, in the decade which has just ended, every part of our lives, personal lives, business lives, everything became fully digital. So what's going to happen in the new decade? Well, we're going to talk about that on the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. My name is Dave Malarkey. Our guest is Mario Armstrong, digital lifestyle expert and broadcast host and commentator. He joins us by telephone today. Nice to have you with us, Mario.
Dave, thanks so much for having me on It's Your Turn, man. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm in Las Vegas right now at the Consumer Electronics Show where it's like the World Cup, my friend, of technology announcements and news and 180,000 people are here, Dave. It's amazing how many people come out for this show.
Well, we want to talk about some of the stuff that's going on at the CES. First of all, tell us about blockchain. Now, that's a buzzword that I'm not familiar with, Mario.
Yeah, and some of the technologies that are really hot trends are some words that we're going to kind of demystify and help your audience understand. Because it's, when you're at the show, it's all about the devices. It's all about self-driving cars or foldable phones that are coming out, or new technologies with our televisions getting bigger, or 8K getting more advanced. And the thing that's been powering all of these devices are a lot of these top trends of mine that I'm seeing that are happening behind the scenes. So I really wanted to take a moment and give you some examples on how this works. So you mentioned blockchain. Blockchain is, think of it as a digital ledger. Like you would think of your checkbook as a ledger. Think of this as a digital ledger, a way that you can track and keep track and trust all sorts of things. For example, through blockchain technology, we can track food and where the food is coming from. So from farm to table, we can track lettuce, potatoes, fruits and vegetables, different food. And today, it was just announced with IBM and Farmer Connect, they created a new app called Thank My Farmer. I love this idea of this new app because it uses blockchain, but it's really about thanking the farmer, but also uncovering the process of how coffee is being made. So now if you're a coffee drinker, you got your bag of coffee, you bought it at the store, you're at home, you open up this app on your phone, you scan the barcode of that bag of coffee, and up will come an interactive map and a whole bunch of content displaying and showing you the story as to how that coffee is made, the process it goes through, the harvesting, the planting, the exporting, the shipping, so that every part of that process is transparent to you as a consumer. And that makes you a more empowered consumer. Not only do you now know exactly where the stuff that your money is going to is coming from, but you can also donate to that farmer or give back. But you can take that same technology and use it for clothing. Like maybe you want to be a more conscious consumer and spend money on clothes that are being made, processed, designed, developed in the U.S. So something like blockchain would help you be able to understand whether or not that clothing manufacturer you're buying from is doing that.
And this app is available to the general public?
Yeah, the Thank My Farmer app is just came out. It's great. It's really showing that whole farmer-to-table process. And it really, you know, at first I was like, you know, how interactive can this be? What am I really going to learn? And I thought it was just a simple timeline. And then when I really opened up the app and looked at it, I'm like, oh, wow, no, this is way more detail. Like you get a full description. You really get an understanding of that coffee bean and everything that touches that coffee bean to the process of getting to your cup of coffee. So it makes that whole thing really transparent. So now I know exactly what's really going into it, what the ingredients are, who the companies are that are behind it, which makes me feel like a more intelligent consumer about what I'm spending my money on.
We're chatting, listeners, with Mario Armstrong. You've probably seen him on TV. He's a two-time Emmy Award-winning talk show host, digital lifestyle expert. He's been a regular contributor to the Today Show on NBC, CNN, NPR. He's been on Rachel Ray, Inside Edition, and other shows as well. And you have a new daily podcast, do you not, Mario?
Yes, and I love radio the most, my friend Dave. Radio is the theater of the mind. It's one of the most precious mediums that I love. But yes, I do have a podcast that is like a digital radio feature. It's a daily 5-minute or less motivational podcast. It's all about helping people pursue their passions. It's great for entrepreneurs or people that are looking to freelance or people that are just looking to figure out how to take their side hustle and make it a main hustle for them. It's all rooted in advice and inspiration to help you achieve the things that you're passionate about in your life.
Well, let's talk about some of the other things that we're going to see develop more and more and more in the next decade. What about artificial intelligence, Mario? Talk about that for a little bit.
Oh, Dave, that's a biggie. That's a good one, man. AI has been talked about a lot. IBM has called this 2020 the year that AI really takes hold. I really believe that, and it's because it's already started to show up in other things that we do already, but it's advancing. So let me explain. A lot of people think maybe AI is going to take away jobs or create more robots. That's not what this whole thing about AI is all about. AI really is about helping companies as well as you, the consumer, anticipate things you may need. So, for example, when you speak to your Alexa device or when you looking, when you call into a call center and you have a question about a product that you bought, and you're talking to what sounds like a robot, but it's more human-like voice that's talking to you in regular natural language, that's AI taking over. And the idea of AI is to really do repetitive tasks so that humans can really work on the more complex tasks. So a human doesn't need to be on the phone taking your basic information every single time you call in. They should be working on the more complex things that actually humans can solve. And so that's where the difference of AI is really kicking in play. But it's also in sports and entertainment. Like, for example, football season's big right now, and let's say that you have a favorite quarterback and you wanted to see all the highlights from this season where your quarterback threw for a touchdown. Well, AI, you would be able to go online and you'd say, let me see my favorite quarterback from this team for this season, for this year, all the touchdowns that he threw. And you'll be able to get a video reel of all those clips, of all those highlights in seconds. Wow. So AI powers all of that stuff. So we don't see a lot of the technology that's empowering these experiences, but that's where AI and things like that come into play.
Mario is at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas right now. Here's another term, Mario, that I must confess I'm not familiar with. Edge computing. What the heck is that?
And you shouldn't be. Honestly, this is really a term that is really kind of new. You've probably heard 5G before, though, right, Dave?
I have, yes.
I've heard that before. Yeah. So here's what edge computing really means to the average listener that's listening to us right now in Pittsburgh. What does this mean to you? This means that when you're on your phone and you're doing a Google search, or you're calling out to your device for information to come back to you, the way it works now is that our phones have to access networks. Typically, we have to go, think of it as a circle. You got to go inside that network, inside the circle, to get the information that you need, and it gets brought back to you. But if we could make transactions, if technology infrastructure could make transactions and processing happen on the edge of the circle, you wouldn't have to go into the circle for everything all the time, which means it's a shorter distance to get that information back to your device. So a real-world example would be if you are, so for your devices, you'll be able to do things like gaming that will be better. Augmented reality will be better. Real estate agents are going to love the fact that they're going to be able to point their camera, point their phone at a house, and you'll be able to do a walkthrough of the house without actually going into it and be able to see video, 3D, all types of animations and graphics. If you're driving a self-driving car, which is here at the show, we're seeing a lot of these self-driving cars, you want that data to come to you as fast as possible in real time. So edge computing really empowers. If you're driving in your car, you want to know there's an accident up ahead. Because you can process that information faster from the car to the edge of the network, edge computing gets you that information quicker.
One other thing I want to talk about before our time expires, and that is hybrid cloud. Most folks have heard about cloud computing. I understand that hybrid is kind of analogous to getting ready to go on vacation when you get all your stuff laid out from different places. Is that right, Mario?
This is true, because when we talk about the cloud, we don't really break this down for consumers, but we think it's like this one box where maybe all your stuff is stored. But really, it's your stuff is stored in a bunch of different boxes throughout the internet, and so that's the cloud. So the hybrid cloud is having your more sensitive data closer to you. So for example, a company that's doing boarding passes and you're traveling, you're using an app to get your boarding pass. Your boarding pass doesn't really have personal information on it. It's got your seat number, your flight, nothing really, really, not like your passport does or your license does. So this hybrid cloud is really enabling companies to do more with security, but also save costs, which should come down to us, by being able to put certain things privately that are really important data, but then leaving other things kind of more publicly, which is what we're used to now. So that hybrid is what we're talking about. This hybrid cloud is enabling that.
We're talking about all this high-tech stuff that we can expect during the next decade. Mario, do you still have time to tell us about the hybrid computer, the quantum computer?
Oh, yeah, the quantum computer. So this is, like, really the big thing. You know, this is one of IBM's favorite things because it's such a big deal. Quantum computers, really quick, quantum computing is something that we're seeing here at the show because it's really talking about coming up with medical discoveries, coming up with new elements that may power electric vehicles. And really what a quantum computer does is it has the ability to do more mathematical computations way faster than traditional computers can do today. So even looking at things in healthcare and other industries, being able to solve complex problems that traditional computers today haven't been able to solve, that's where quantum computing is really showing tons of promise and a lot of results.
What a world we live in. Just think of the changes in the past 20, 25 years, huh? Whenever, I mean, 25 years ago, people were just getting used to computers.
I mean, we were just talking about beta versus VHS not too long ago.
That's true. Mario, thanks for chatting with us. I know you're busy out there in Las Vegas. Mario Armstrong visiting with us
thanks,
today.
Dave.
Nice to talk to you.
Likewise.
Tobacco for Less is Western PA's largest glass emporium, and they now have a store in Butler at Pullman Square Plaza. What makes Tobacco for Less different from other stores? For starters, they have so many glass pipes to choose from. They also feature a walk-in humidor and a vape juice bar. And of course, they carry a variety of standard tobacco products too. The Tobacco for Less Health and Wellness Department stocks a large selection of high-quality CBD products. For all your smoking and vaping needs, check out Tobacco for Less with locations in Butler, Sharon, and Aliquippa.
Coming up on the It's Your Turn program on this segment, listeners, I'm Dave Malarkey, by the way. We're going to be talking by telephone with our guest, Dr. David Levy, who is an award-winning professor of psychology at Pepperdine University. Dr. Levy, hello. Nice to have you with us
hello.
For a few minutes here today.
Pleasure, Dave. Thanks so much for having me.
We want to talk about a fun little book that you've written entitled Life is a Four-Letter Word, and I think probably from the title most of our listeners would guess that you're sharing some laughs, but also some interesting stories about stumbling and falling and then being able to laugh at yourself, right?
That's exactly right. It's a book that's 40 little anecdotes from my life, that each of which ends with a life lesson. So it's the kind of book that people can pick up and read a story and then think about their own lives and find a way to laugh or find some wisdom in it. The important thing to me is that people, I think, can relate to these stories at a really personal level. And as you said, the book is intended to be fun. I engage in what I call guerrilla writing. That means I get in, I make the point, and I get out. So each chapter is a couple of pages, just enough to get a bite-sized feeling for what the story and the theme is about, and then you move on to the next one.
Yeah, you can read each one in about a minute or so.
Just about. That's right.
Browse through the book. I have a review copy here in front of me. Are all of the anecdotes and the slices of wisdom from your life in the past?
Absolutely. Everyone is totally true. I had to change a few of the names to protect the innocent, but other than that, every word in the book is true, and it's arranged in a chronological format. In other words, the first story is when I was at age 6, and it takes me all the way to age 60. And, you know, the first story that I have in the book, it's called The Shot. And, you know, Dave, when I was a kid, I was really, really scared of shots. I know that all kids hate shots, but I was particularly terrified. And I was a verbal kid, so I would try to fend off getting the shot by asking a barrage of questions. So the nurse comes in with a harpoon ready to stab me, and I start to ask her, wait a minute, what kind of shot is it? No, wait a minute, is it a tetanus? Is it a booster? How many cc's? And she says to me, David, you can ask me all the questions you want, but you're going to get this shot. And it froze me in my tracks, Dave. It was like I realized that, like, there's no escaping it. And the life lesson that I've been trying to work with ever since, if something is going to happen that you don't like and it's inevitable, get it done. Just do it. Make that phone call. Make that decision. If you have to get a lab test, go to the doctors. Get it done. Because I found the waiting is frequently as bad or worse than the event itself. So each story has, again, a little story, a little essay, followed by an important life lesson. Happy to share more with you if you like, or talk about whatever you like.
Well, we will share a couple of more. There are quite a few of them in the book.
One 40 of them, in total, yeah.
Yeah, 40 altogether. One of them has to do with a car that you had, an Alfa Romeo, as I recall.
Oh, no. You're causing post-traumatic stress disorder in me. Yes, my Alfa Romeo, my beautiful red sports car that I totaled when I was in my mid-20s. I was on a TV series in my 20s called Wonderbug. It was like the Mod Squad for kids. And I didn't have much money, but I was on TV, so I bought a perfectly restored Alfa Romeo sports car. Remember The Graduate?
Oh, yes.
With Dustin Hoffman. Okay, that's the car. That's not the literal car, but a bright red sports car. And I would drive that car every day, and I polished it and cleaned it. And I kept asking myself, now mind you, I'm 22 years old. How fast can this car go? You know where this is going, don't you, Dave?
Oh, yes,
I do. How fast can I take this turn? And I kept pushing the limits. I kept pushing the limits. And then one day I found out there's a curve in L.A. going north on the Harbor Freeway that's listed for 35 miles an hour. Well, let's say I took it a lot faster than 35, like a lot faster. And I totaled the car, smashed it, destroyed it. And it was really, really tragic for me. I loved that car. The life lesson I got is when you push the limits, you only know that you've gone too far when you've gone too far. And I found out how fast my car could take that turn. I found out the hard way. But that's true in life. You know, if you're clipping your toenails, how close can I cut it until I cut my skin? Well, you find out, don't you?
Yeah.
When you're at a first date, how far can I go in terms of a conversation or, you know, trying to date somebody and for a second date? You only find out after the fact. And so the only options you have is either don't test the limits so much or be prepared for the consequences.
I still can't get past
it. How hard can I push my boss? Well, do you really want to find out? Do you really want to find out how hard you can push him? And usually you don't want to find out.
I'm seeing that image of Dustin Hoffman tooling down the highway in his Alfa Romeo in The Graduate. Boy, that was a long time
Dave,
ago.
I'm telling you, that was the image in my head when I got this car. He's driving up Pacific Coast Highway from L.A. to Berkeley, and that's the image I had. He was in search of his love. And the image I have in my head is I was driving down the Harbor Freeway, and I destroyed the car. So, you know, that's why they make movies, because they're fantasy. In the real world, it doesn't work that way.
Another one of your life lessons occurred with your young daughter, who was, I believe, two years old at the time. Do you remember that?
Yeah. I remember them all, sure. We were sitting watching TV one morning, and I'm flipping through the channels, and there's an image of, like, a bunny rabbit hopping through the field, and she goes, "Oh, Daddy, look, a bunny." So we're watching, and all of a sudden they cut to a fox, like, chasing down the bunny. I thought, oh, my God, this is going to be a bad outcome. So I grabbed for the remote control. Remember in The Godfather when Fredo fumbles for his gun when his father is being shot? That's what it was like. I fumble for the remote, and I fumble it. Sure enough, the fox drags the rabbit down, and she bursts into tears. And I'm feeling like a failure as a parent. I've destroyed my kid. I've traumatized her. And so I tried to talk to her. I'm a psychologist, and I'm still lost about what to say to my poor daughter. I go, "Honey, why don't you like what happened?" And I thought she was going to say, you know, the fox is mean, or I feel bad for the bunny. What she said really took me back. She was two, and she said, "I don't like it because it hurts my stomach." And I thought, well, that's an odd thing to say. Until it dawned on me, that's how kids know what they're feeling. They don't have the cognitive abilities to put sentences together. But all she knew is, when she watched that scene, her stomach hurt. It made her anxious and scared and sad. So the lesson for me is, as kids and as adults, that's how we learn how we feel, is by listening to our bodies. Mm. If you, Dave, are anxious or angry or sad, the only way you know what you're feeling is by being connected to what your body's telling you. Everybody has their own little map for different emotions. So in my work as a therapist and as a teacher, I teach that lesson, that how do you help people get in touch with their feelings? How does your stomach feel? How does your heart feel? Are your hands sweating? That's how you know. If you didn't have a connection to your body, you wouldn't even have an emotion. It would just be thoughts. So that was the takeaway for me, and I was able to soothe her by giving her a dish of Haagen-Dazs coffee ice cream with bananas and, you know, Hershey syrup. That made her happy. She was two. Life is easier, Dave, when you're two, you know.
We're talking with Dr. David A. Levy, an award-winning professor of psychology at Pepperdine University. Out in California, by the way. Dr. Yep. Levy is a much sought-out media consultant for psychological perspectives on current events. He's appeared on a lot of television, all the major networks, PBS, CNN, NPR, and so on and so forth. We're talking about his book, Life is a Four-Letter Word, Slice of Life Tales, short ones, just a page or two. We have time for one more. You mentioned that the first story that you have, you are age six. What about the last one? What's the last one in the book, Dr. Lee?
Okay, yeah, the last one in the book was about my father, who, I don't want to tip the ending, but I will. He's now 92. But when he was 85, he was diagnosed with a really, really bad pancreatic cancer. And we knew what that meant. That meant he maybe had months to live, so the morning of the surgery, where they're going to try to do whatever repair they can, we're all huddled around the poor guy, and we know this is maybe the last time that we see him, and we're all, you know, sad, and we're trying to keep him happy, and we're all miserable. And he turns to my sister, my younger sister, and says, "Sweetie, do you still have that piece of paper where I signed away? I said, you know, don't resuscitate, don't take any extraordinary measures to save my life." And she says tearfully, "Yes, Dad, I still have the paper." He goes, "Good. Tear it up." Isn't that great?
Oh, that's terrific.
So, for me, it's about the will to live. You don't know how you're going to feel till you're in the moment. And he was not ready to go. In fact, he survived it, and he's 92 right now. But, wow, you know, we don't know in life how we're going to feel until we're in a situation. And he simply was not ready to go when push came to shove. We all cried and laughed, and, you know, it was a very, very poignant time for us, but the wisdom was enormous to me from that story.
Laughing and learning through 40 life lessons, which are summarized briefly in Dr. Levy's book, Life is a Four-Letter Word, by Dr. David.
Which it is.
That's true. Dr. David A. Levy, our guest. Doctor, nice to have you with us for a few minutes.
Oh, thank you so much, Dave. You have a great day.
And you too. So long now.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You've been so busy getting ready for the holidays that you totally forgot to get your vehicle ready for the winter. No worries. West End Tire and Service kept their snow tire inventory up, but don't wait too long as they're harder to come by later in the season. West End Tire and Service prides itself on offering the same great service, installation, and staff as Siemens provided for years. Their trained technicians will check your air pressure and do tire evaluations for free. Anytime. Stop in and see what's new and be sure to visit them on Facebook. West End Tire Service today, West Cunningham Street, next to Battery Warehouse Plus, Butler.
Listeners, coming up on the It's Your Turn program, my name is Dave Mowarkey. We're going to be talking about fibromyalgia. I'm sure that most of you have at least heard that term, but what is it? We're going to be talking with Dr. Barbara Bruce, who is affiliated with the Mayo Clinic. And Dr. Bruce, nice to have you with us here today.
Thank you for inviting me.
So, let's start with that question straight away. What is fibromyalgia?
Actually, fibromyalgia is a chronic disorder. It affects upwards to 10 million Americans, primarily women. It's a disorder that has been described to me many times as, imagine that you woke up every morning and felt like you had the flu. My patients feel achy, they hurt, they're tired, they feel exhausted, and have trouble getting on with their lives and their day.
Is there any particular part of the body that seems to get these aches and pains?
Widespread, all over. Hmm. But there are also lots of other symptoms that come along with the pain and fatigue, such as trouble with tummies and trouble with bladder and trouble with headaches and jaw pain and many other pain disorders that can also go along with fibromyalgia.
The Mayo Clinic has published a guide to fibromyalgia, strategies to take back your life. Is this available in many places, or do you get it online, Dr. Bruce? Where, how do you get it?
Should be in your local bookstore, library, and certainly on the Internet.
A lot of myths about fibromyalgia, right? A lot of people think they might understand it, but they don't. Even some physicians, I guess, huh?
You know, it turns out that this constellation of symptoms that we call fibromyalgia have been around for decades under different names. There have been a lot of misunderstandings about fibromyalgia, with patients being told that it's not real, that it's just all in their head, that there's no such thing, that patients are attention-seeking or drug-seeking. And research is telling us that this is inaccurate, and we're starting to understand what is causing fibromyalgia. And it seems to be a central nervous system problem that affects the sensory system.
Is it difficult to diagnose, Dr. Bruce?
Difficult to diagnose. My patients have had symptoms on average 10 years before they get an accurate diagnosis.
Wow.
So, yes, there's some healthcare providers who still are not aware of the changes in the information related to fibromyalgia, and there's some healthcare providers who continue to think that they don't believe that it is a real diagnosis. So patients often struggle.
Does the physician, the practicing physician, just examine the symptoms that present in the patient, or is there a blood test or something like that for fibromyalgia?
You know, that's been part of the problem. There is not a blood test for fibromyalgia or an x-ray, and often patients are worked up for other ailments that can have similar symptoms, and certainly lots of things can cause pain and fatigue. So those things are examined, but with a complete examination and with the appropriate testing, physicians are able to make an accurate diagnosis of fibromyalgia.
Should your PCP be able to start you on the road, or do you need to see a specialist about this?
You know, actually the book lays out kind of a nice plan for how patients can approach, whether they suspect they have fibromyalgia, whether they've been told they have fibromyalgia, whether they've been diagnosed with fibromyalgia but they don't want to have the diagnosis of fibromyalgia. We lay out a way to educate patients about this disorder, what it is, what it looks like, and then encourage patients to bring that information to their primary care physicians to begin to sort this out. Often patients will end up seeing a rheumatologist. Dr. Andy Abril, who's my co-editor, he's a chair of rheumatology at Mayo, and they will often see a rheumatologist to sort this out because there's a lot of overlap in the symptoms of fibromyalgia with other rheumatologic diseases such as lupus or rheumatoid arthritis. They are not the same thing. Patients can have both, but often that is a place where it gets a bit confusing because of the overlap.
I have a review copy of the book, The Mayo Clinic Guide to Fibromyalgia. I've got it in my hand here. It seems that it's written in a way that the average person will be able to understand it, including with a lot of color photographs and charts and so on.
I have had in my career an opportunity to see thousands of patients with fibromyalgia, as has Dr. Abril and an array of scientists and physicians across Mayo Clinic. So we've been able to draw from that information, draw from the evidence that's being produced around the world as this research has exploded. And what we tried to do is distill it down into a guide that walks people through current evidence, research-based, accurate information, and tools that we know can be helpful in moving patients toward a better quality of life, a way to return to their lives and turn down these symptoms.
So there are treatment options for this condition?
There are. There are some medications that are approved for fibromyalgia, and there are lots of other strategies that we outline in the book that can help people to feel better. Our goal in treatment is to reduce the number of flares, which are the increase in symptoms, and to make them less intense. We unfortunately don't have a cure for fibromyalgia yet, but the research is ongoing.
Do we know anything about the cause? Is it congenital or is it contagious? Do you catch it from somebody?
We don't think that you catch it. We don't think it's contagious. We don't necessarily know what's causing it yet. We know it's a central nervous system problem. Research is looking at things like viruses. They're looking at things like some sort of a physical, like a surgery or an accident or a car crash as a precipitant. We know it runs in families, so the genetics are being examined. Lots of areas of research, but we've not been able to identify a single cause yet. Research is ongoing.
Are there treatment options that won't necessarily cure it, but will help reduce the pain?
Absolutely. And we talk about those in the book and try to lay out kind of a structured strategy, set of strategies, a plan for patients to feel better. And we start with the way that they're thinking about their illness. We want to provide a lot of reassurance and information about what is and is not wrong. Again, partnering with your physician so you've got that support and as you embark on this plan. We talk about ways to communicate with loved ones so that they can, in fact, support patients as they move forward in trying to manage these symptoms. We talk about the way we're thinking about the symptoms. We talk about ways to reduce stress, which we know can trigger flares in fibromyalgia and make symptoms worse. And we talk about improving sleep, which is significantly disrupted in this disorder, and ways to get moving again.
Any idea why it occurs mostly in women?
It's a great question. There's lots of theories. We don't know. Some theorists think that is it a stress factor that women are experiencing or perceiving more stress? Mm-hmm. Is it because men don't go to the doctor? We know they don't tend to doctor as much as women do. Is it possible that more men have it, but we don't know that because they're not being adequately diagnosed? But the number we see, about 85% of our patients at Mayo are women.
Wow. The Mayo Clinic Guide to Fibromyalgia. It's been our pleasure to talk with one of the co-authors of the guide, Dr. Barbara Bruce. Thanks, Doctor. Very informative. Thanks for chatting with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Sure. So long now.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Malarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 12:30 to 1:30, right here on WISR 680.